of the worries that it has given me without luck of any sort. Not with the son that God gave me, so sick, the poor thing. Nor in marriage. But how could I have known? My mother always told me, Maria, be careful. But my Antonio basically is not really that bad. No, madame. And he is the father of my Antonio. Poor little thing. So very weak he came out of the body. And now, with your permission, I'm going back to work, madame. Forgive me for running on like this. Why did this have to happen to me here in the house of madame? I'm very grateful for your care. I even feel in many ways ashamed. You know, nobody ever paid so much attention to my health. So let me go back to work. I still have the dishes as well as the clothes, and I can't have any more breaks if I want to finish today. Then with your permission, madame, with your permission.
Text upon solitude. You are beautiful, said the man, passing his hands down the naked and exposed body on the bed. One leg bent, the other extended along the length of the sheet. You are beautiful, the man said again, outlining her breasts with his fingers, noticing the clenched lips under his, and the profound and acid disgust reflected in her eyes. I like your hair, your concave belly, your thin hips, your arms, your smell, your tongue. I like that you feel disgust, but that you come to bed with me. He leaned then, going over her with his mouth, as if trying to breathe her, leaving on the skin the wet scar of saliva. Voracious, the body limp, trying to gain form. Hardness in that of the woman that fights off. Although unmoving, stiff, that fights off. Monica thought, I'm going mad. Monica thought, I'm going mad. Wanted the soft terrain of her flesh, and with thick kisses devoured her freshness, drank in the ecstatic fragility of the neck and of the brief gesture she made in order to put a stop to it. In a sudden movement, he pinioned her thin wrists to the sheets. Petrified, Monica felt him starting to enter her, slowly at first, the sex still limp, undecided in its half impotence, afterwards thicker and warmer, impatient, awkward. A small penis, atrophied inside her deep vagina, soft to female, large by love and struggles and profound spasms. He saw her fixed eyes, hard, acid as transparent stones of a translucent blue, rare, of water or of sea, but mainly rough, unmoving. Monica sees the eyes of the man, congested, small of a brown streaked with dirty yellow, lost in hers. Monica hears the moaning of the man each time he comes and goes inside her. She feels the sticky sweat of the man and the flaccidity of the belly that spasmodically spreads itself over her hips and her belly. Then the nausea freed itself like a rising spring, invading everything, burning a very high wave, closing her throat, concentrating itself there in a vomit that she swallows, in dizziness, nauseated. The man makes an effort to finish, exhausted, the sex lost inside that dry, hostile, inhospitable vagina. He makes efforts. In that spongy flesh, furiously, the hands spread out on the bed. Quickly, quickly, in a pendular movement, comes and goes rapidly to hasten the orgasm caught in the empty testicles without sperm. Monica thought, I'm going mad. Monica thought, I'm going mad. From the beginning, thinking of the husband and of the love and of the desire of him and of the passion for him that would not be silent, that would not be silent ever, in an enormous scream, Monica screamed, slowly, intermittently, a monstrous scream like a monstrous and stabbing pain. Lost in that scream, the man got excited, thrust himself in the woman, forced her to turn her back, and with firm knees, fingers clutching her hanging breast, forced her anus where he went tearing in her, searing in her, in pleasure, coming quickly, filling her with his watery, tepid milk. And then he got excited again and came again as a revenge upon her, smearing her with his sex. He then closed the closed mouth, giving her the knowledge of the taste of his victory. Monica waited for him to fall asleep. Heard his breathing, attentive then, slowly, taking care of each movement. Grabbed a pillow and covered his face with all her desperate strength, leaning over the body, her legs stopping the legs that are trying to overturn her. And thus they stayed united until she stopped feeling him move. And even afterwards, this way, hours stretched over the body, already cold, sleeping, resting her head on the pillow over his face.
Sisters, but what can literature do? Or rather, what can words do?
And of eroticism, gentlemen, and of eroticism. In almost all books called erotic that are abundant today, il n'y a pas de femme libre. Il y a des femmes livrées aux hommes. This is the liberation men offer us. From the resting place of the warrior, we come to be the remains of the war. And she died for having done an abortion with a stick of celery. She died of septicemia, the woman that days ago cleaned the office where I work. And I heard later through her friend that it was her 23rd abortion. And I was told years ago by a friend of mine, a doctor, that in hospital beds, the women are despised and badly treated who come in with their uteruses perforated, shredded, wrecked by home attempts at abortion with knitting needles, sticks of wood, stalks of kale, everything penetrating and hard-edged found at hand. And their uteruses are scraped cold without anesthesia, sadistically. So they will learn. Learn what? With lightning, learn that upon them falls, masked as the fatality of destiny, the contradiction that society created between fecundity demanded of the woman's womb and the place denied for children. Since the destiny of man and woman has been divided into two branches, but until when, upon the woman has fallen, besides all the existential anguish and all the social repressions that are common to both man and woman, upon her has fallen the anguish of her biological destiny, which makes her drama no longer the dramatic experience of the species, and upon the woman it has fallen that her biological destiny becomes the instrument of repression in her individual drama. And lovers pass, and we know them irredeemably distant. For there is no love of two that is worth it. In love, A woman stands in the anguishing extremity, in a repressive and solitary destiny that society invented for her. What could Romeo and Juliet do?
A daughter. Mother. Antonio came to ask me to go see you and forgive you. Will you also ask me to forgive you? Do you expect me to bend over the bed where you have already begun to putrefy and kiss your forehead so you will be able to die in peace? But what right have you to die in peace? To close your eyes in peace? And to close your eyes without the knife of remorse twisting in your breast? It is not enough to be a mother. It is not enough to have borne a child in your womb and to make her love you. But to make her hate you, how much evil you must have done. You ignore surely the weight of my hatred. Not because I have hidden it from you, but because I could never hurt you with the knife point of my hatred. Impotent was I for this. You are nonetheless conscious of the crime that you have done. Today you deny me my son, who looks at me as if I were mad, a person to pity. I can imagine what you have told him, how you distorted what happened. Together with Antonio, you brought him up in your own way, gleefully laughing at my despair and anxiousness to hold in my arms the son you have wrenched from me. Connivers, both executioners and judges, combined to make me suffer and under your power put away here, where now you come to look for me, to forgive you the punishment that you have given me. Punishment? But what punishment? Can it be that a woman is obliged to take from a man all the humiliation only because he is the husband, owner, lord? Can it be that to be born a woman means to be unhappy and to carry a burden far beyond her capacity to carry? You are wrong. From my mouth you shall never hear one word that in any way resembles forgiveness. On the contrary, until death, and even after death, my hatred will follow you. Do you not condemn me forever to this prison where they have put me for madness? And can one mother ask for the lucidity of true forgiveness from someone who is demented? Forgiveness of what? And for what, after all? Were you not right? And was I not mad? Are you not normal? And am I not demented? Then I can have nothing to forgive you. You can die with my hatred without letting it bother you in the least, as has been your habit. Isn't it so? You know, nevertheless, that to free myself, I have put myself inside bars, and I am not sorry. Only, how imprudent of me not to have reckoned with your claws and the weight of the law. I refuse to use guile, the only weapon permitted a woman. I used instead loyalty in a fight where one only gets knifed in the back. And once more, I fail, Mother, in the war between the two of us. For I know this letter will never get to your hands. But what a strange letter to be written by a madwoman, Antonio. Won't you want equally my forgiveness one day? And when this happens, I will give you all my hatred, intact and brimming, overflowing with more hatred, as I now give it to my mother, to whom you will never read these lines, badly written by my hand, unaccustomed to holding a pen. Nothing keeps you from taking me, I know, by force, as you brought me here, to the bedside of this woman so she can see me and in her half-death understand my presence as that of forgiveness. Then you may rest assured, Antonio, that when I spit in her face, I shall be thanking you sincerely for the opportunity you have given me to do it. Mariana.
Excerpts from the journal of Anna Maria, direct descendant of the niece of Donna Maria Anna, and born in 1914. Ancestor Maria Anna, philosopher, where do we stand? If a woman has nothing, if she exists only through a man, if even her pleasure is small and bloodless, what does she risk or lose by rebelling? The revolution is a risky game, and the bourgeois, throwing their lot in with the French Revolution, risked everything, although the objectives of their attack were limited. But what does a woman risk or lose if nothing gratifies her anyway? What were you complaining about? I know well that the problem is not put in this way. I'm of bad faith, but that does not diminish the importance of what I'm saying. I know that the revolt of a woman is the one that leads to convulsion on all levels of society. Nothing is left standing, not relationships among classes, nor groups, nor individuals. All repression will have to be uprooted. And the first repression, that with which the history of the entire human race was written, creating the model and the myths of other repressions, is the one of man against woman. No form of balance will be possible for us, therefore, with that as a beginning, not even manipulation of our children. Everything will have to be new. And we're all afraid. And the problem of woman in the midst of this is not losing or winning, but of her identity. No doubt in this society many things are gratifying to the woman, but that the woman and the man are not conscious of how they are manipulated and conditioned, that leaves less doubt. The perfect repression is the one that is not felt by the one who suffers it, that is assumed in the course of a wise education so that the mechanisms of repression come to be inside the individual and he takes from there his own satisfaction. And if by chance the woman perceives her own servitude and rejects it, how, with whom can she identify? Where relearn to be? Where reinvent the model, the role, the image, the gesture, the daily word, the acceptance and the love from others and the signals of acceptance and love? I know well, Ancestor Maria Anna, what you complained about, of what you were incapable. To invent alone the mother, the heroine, the myth, the matrix that would give you density and significance before the others, that even in the other would open the path, if not of communication, at least of uncertainty. And what did you invent in this tentative redesigning of your presence? In your hour and in your place. You refused a husband. You refused man. And what this gesture means to us is that you are a spinster, frustrated, and a maniac. Like all women without a man. Writing pretentious texts in the same way that if you lived today, you would probably have a poodle or you do volunteer work for charity. And this is the tone in which I also take you, at least partly, or deeply, in spite of understanding you, in spite of recognizing that in this way I also fear you. Where reinvent the gesture and the word? Everything is invaded by ancient meanings, and we ourselves, we women who intend to make a revolution, are invaded to the bones, to the marrow. Looking at you, Maria Anna,
I see, without wanting, as all the others, various facets that mutually taint each other, although, or maybe because, some of them are antagonistic. The woman who refused confrontation with the other, who drew back from pain and shared experience. Rejected woman, nobody wanted you, maybe for your refusal or maybe not. In any case, rejected woman is a figure socially scorned and detested. And this scorn is the punishment from which we all try to escape. Escape without alternative. Seeing that this scorn is the vast measure that leads us to hide the instinctive or willful character of the refusal of the woman who stays alone. Thus we color any hint of refusal that seems bitter with puritanism or frigidity, and we focus very much on the consequences of refusal. Solitude, aridity, frustration. For with them, we reweave the beginning of the cycle. The guilt of the woman who stays alone, and if you don't have a man, therefore you're puritanical or frigid, and therefore you remain frustrated, and why do I suppose you virgin? And the man who rejects the woman has a certain aura of superiority that is imbecile but disdainful. We accept that he rejects the known, the exercise of his sex over the other, his sex always known. And nobody will suspect him virgin, even if he is. All is visible and finished. But the woman who rejects the man seems to us always inferior and ignorant, fleeing from the knowledge of her sex that would be revealed and molded and taught by the man, escaping from the power of the macho, as from an opponent who was previously vanquished, dodging the inevitable defeat that in its essence we all consider natural. And Sister Maria Anna, like this we see you. Like this I am hostile to you, although your sister. In this epoch that many may call one of equality, where the work of the woman is already worth money, little, and the word of the woman is already heard and badly understood. Will the day come, Maria Anna? Sisters, one of us asked, but what can literature do? Or rather, what can words do? And today I answer us with this sentence by Reynaldo Arenas. During this time I felt alone and would take refuge in literature. What time? Our time. And what weapon? What weapon do we use or despise? In what refuge do we hide, or what struggle is ours while only in the domain of words? What can we do with them in our favor and from woman to woman say to ourselves and tell ourselves of the domain that we still are, the remains today of the warriors that pretend to be comrades in helping the fight, but only intend to mount us and to be cavaliers of Marianas, imprisoned by other slaveries and nuns of different convents, without realizing it. Here we are in Portugal, in the full era of women's liberation. The woman votes and goes to the university, employs herself, the woman drinks, the woman smokes, the woman enters beauty contests. The woman wears maxi mini skirts, hot pants, Tampax. Says, I have my period in front of men. The woman takes the pill, shaves the hair off her legs and under her arms, wears bikinis. The woman goes out at night alone, goes to bed with her boyfriend. The woman sleeps naked. The woman understands. She already knows the meaning of certain words, such as orgasm, penis, vagina, sperm, testicles, erection, frigidity, clitoris, masturbation, vulva. The women between themselves in the intimacy of bathrooms, of government offices where they are employed, in school recesses and universities, in bedrooms, in living rooms with closed doors, already tell each other obscene anecdotes, certain intimate details about behavior in bed. And in secret, take certain liberties of language, and thus they modernize, liberate, promote themselves. Here we are then, sisters, in the full era of the liberation of the Portuguese woman. And the man exalts and affirms, we are for the promotion of the woman. Let us promote the woman. Let us unchain the woman. Let us free the woman. And the man exalts, sisters, and helps the woman in this farce, in this enticement, this false and shameful liberation, where each time more and more she is imprisoned and now imprisons herself. The woman is caught in the chains of a society that uses her, dominates her, enslaves her, conducts her, utilizes her, manipulates her, consumes her. A society where emerge texts like this, entitled Woman and Labor. And because it is said as a joke that the woman is the last colony of the man, perhaps it is worth it to take the risk. Even if this formula in quotes might be excessive and in bad taste, it expresses nevertheless the fact that the professional condition of women is still submitted to numerous inequalities. Take notice of a certain tone so well known to us. It is said as a joke. As a joke, sisters? In quotes might be excessive. Excessive, sisters? And in bad taste? Well, of course in bad taste, sisters. Colony of men, the woman? What an idea. What an exaggeration. What can literature do, sisters? What can words do against all this? Having to count above all and always with, the woman does not have her own culture. She exists in a culture where power belongs to men. Therefore, she is in this culture alienated.
Of a woman and a man. What did you do with my tears? I dried them up in the wall. They dried up my milk. What did you do with my wound? I healed it with soldiers' pay. I healed it with baked bread. What did you do with my eyes? I blinded them in your flesh. I blinded them with your stick. What did you do with my sons? I gave them death by skirts. I gave them death by weapons. What did you do with my hands? I cut them off in my hunger. I cut them off in your hunger. What did you do with my guts? I removed the sons of myself. I removed the sons of ourselves. What did you do with my bones? I smashed them as dead weight. I broke them to make them mine. What did you do with my soul? I gave it for others to hunt. I gave it for others to eat. What did you do with my love? I wore it as adornment, bed of evil and shame. What did we do? I hope to die wise. I hope to die, but never die.
the struggle. Maria slips out of his arm and runs away. The man tries to grab her and pull her back to call her, but stands there watching her move away among the people, who at that hour are crowding the sidewalks against the shop windows or jostling each other as they wait to cross the streets.
Maria, I stood there watching you move away, mute with surprise, thinking you had gone mad, caught by a monstrous fear that kept me from trying to stop you, fear of losing you, or that you would lose yourself, taken away by that imagination of yours, which you well know has always displeased me. You have a weak spirit, and I never thought you frivolous. Your husband. Antonio.
Maria runs among the people who at that hour are crowding the streets, runs without seeing where she goes, without knowing whether or not he is after her in order to take her home, in order to ask that she return as she has before. This time, Maria feels that she will not submit anymore. Never again will she submit. Not to the pleas, not to the threats, not to tenderness or physical torture. She is ready to fight and runs. She flees, carrying with her the emptiness that has been her life, like return baggage.
Maria, I see you still running like a fugitive, your skirt a red stain that I've followed with my eyes for minutes, a few seconds, or arid centuries. In vain I tried to forget you, and even when I finally came to hate you, there you were untouched in my memory. Your fragile presence here in this house where you belong. I will do everything for your return. Your husband, Antonio.
Maria runs. The people crowding the sidewalks impede her passage, and she conquers that with the speed of her legs that become heavier with every piece of ground that she covers. She clutches her hands to her breast and looks for a place to rest. But aren't they just waiting for her to want rest?
Maria, don't think that I want revenge. You know that I love you. Will your cruelty and your pride reach the point at which you prefer death to confessing your mistake and your frivolity in abandoning your house and your husband? There is still time to return. I have always been waiting for you through all these years, and today I continue to look for the moment when I open the door for you and receive you with my forgiveness. You have no other path, no other possible exit. If in the beginning I even feared your return because of the shock of how much I loved you, now I am anxious to be able to take you to me again. I wait for you, your husband, Antonio.
Maria is hunched over in a corner, immobile, her eyes fixed on a vague point in front of her. Her blood's heat diminishes, and without mercy ceases to warm what is still alive in her. She imagines herself going forward again, running, fleeing, finally finding her place in the world. But what place is there for her? Maria thinks that she feels them grabbing her, thrashes around, still tries to flee, to run. But her body refuses to get up, her eyes refuse to see. Her mouth refuses to scream. And it was not necessary to see for Maria to perceive, to be certain of his presence, of his house. And panic takes her then and suffocates her, annihilates the little life she had left in her.
Composition of a young girl, Maria Dalia, born in Caravajal and educated in a convent in Beja. The tasks. There are many kinds of tasks, and each person has to fulfill his task. The tasks divide themselves into two kinds, the tasks of man and the tasks of woman. The tasks of men are those of courage, strength, and command. This is to say, to be presidents, generals, to be priests, soldiers, hunters, to be bullfighters, to be football players and judges, etc., etc. To man, our Lord God gave the task of looking after and commanding, for even Jesus Christ was a man, and God chose to have a son and not a daughter. To die in this world, on account of our sins that are many. And in the hour of his death, he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. In this way, the men are those who organize the wars to take the world away from perdition and sin. For example, the Crusades. Fighting to save the nation and thus defending the women, the children, and the old people.
Next, there are the tasks of women, above all that of having children, to keep them and take care of them during illness, to give them education in one house and affection. It is also the task of women to be teacher and other things, such as seamstress, hairdresser, maid, nurse. There are also women doctors, lawyers, engineers, etc. But my father says it is better we don't trust them, for women were made to have a life inside the household. That is a very pretty task, and it gives a lot of satisfaction to have everything clean and tidy. But when our husband arrives, he can rest from his day of work that was so hard in order to get money to support us and our children.
Since life is now very expensive and nobody can cope with it, my mother says that a woman has to work to help the husband. But I myself would not like at all to help my husband. And I will only marry a rich man that can give me dresses and an automobile and go to the movies and have two maids. And my mother tells me, daughter, you do very well to think like this. Don't marry a bum like your father. Gets is not enough to fill our needs. He brought us to this land because he's really a fool, but he's your father and you must respect him. He emigrated us, and here we only eat the stones that the ground gives, and I am here in this convent. In the land of my mother, we always had my grandfather who helped us. And there the land gives more of its guts to kill the hunger. But my father decided to come to this place as a mason. And as one of the tasks of woman is to obey the man, this my mother did. What saves us is that she goes to clean at the house of a noblewoman, relative of another noblewoman that had a daughter here at this convent. And that one of the tasks of women before was to come to the convent, and even today it is. But now not always she goes by force. Oh, the priest says that this is a vocation, but I don't know what that means, so I say task. That's much prettier. Each one governs themselves, and we in this life have to have the task of being clever, and one of the tasks of woman is to disguise, for I see very well my mother with my father. Once she even told me, daughter, look, a woman has to use a lot of guile to get what she wants. For since we are weaker, the man does with us what he will. And this is what's given to us, but we have to defend ourselves. Another of the tasks of woman, therefore, is to have guile.
There are also the tasks of the poor and the tasks of the rich. One of the tasks of the rich would be to be charitable, and that of the poor to ask and accept what they give them, showing themselves always very grateful.
The world was always like this, preaches the priest. Some with everything, others with nothing. And this is the will of God. Certainly because he was never hungry like us. But the priest answers that to go to heaven after death, it's necessary to be poor. And the rich don't go to heaven. And he told this story of a camel that entered through the hole of a needle. And because I thought that was funny, I started laughing in such a manner that he immediately punished me. One of the tasks of children is to be punished. In the same way as one of the tasks of grown-ups is to punish children so that they will learn to like to punish people. Punishing is a task very useful and necessary for life.
Only last week, my father's boss punished him for saying to his co-workers that they should ask for more money. That which they got was nothing for the demands of food and housing that one has to pay. And my father's boss left my father without work for 1 week, during which only I ate, so to speak, because I was in the convent and only came home to sleep. My mother did not stop admonishing my father with words and tears. Men, don't involve yourself in these things. Look at the result that it is. Here we are dying of hunger, and the others with a full belly. Well, the boss didn't punish them, only you with the ideas. One of the tasks of the bosses is to punish the employees, and the task of the employees is that of working for the bosses so they become rich and more bossy. Maybe one day I will marry a boss.
The truth is that this doesn't mean anything, for when my father comes home drunk and beats my mother up, he screams at her, "I am the boss, I am the boss." And she shuts up and starts crying quietly. All right, I'm going to finish, because I couldn't say all the tasks that exist in the world, otherwise I would spend all my life writing. I would like only to speak of one other task, that of the fallen woman. And I have not understood yet what fallen means, for my mother is fallen and all the women like her. The priest preaches this is a great sin, and that any woman who has this task goes to hell.
Says the priest that one of the tasks of the woman is to be virtuous. And although I also don't understand what it is to be virtuous, I imagine this wouldn't provide enough to live on.
I like very much the tasks. Text of honor or of interrogation, written by a woman named Joanna. I say, the adulterous woman is still stoned to death in Afghanistan and Saudi Arabia.
I ask, is also the adulterous man stoned in Afghanistan or Saudi Arabia?
I say, in Portugal, the majority of women are not only and simply slaves of men, but act out cheerfully, with conviction, their role of woman object, and it is not necessary to be adulterous to be stoned, to be annihilated. It is enough that she emerges and speaks as a man. And since abortion is also illegal in Portugal, the woman here not objecting is always passive, and knowledge of abortion is distorted through information received by people who pretend to ignore what can no longer be ignored, and since everything seems to be fine, and the woman seems to like her secondary and subordinate role, where she limits herself to motherhood, and even when highly educated, chooses marriage as if it were a profession, remunerated through the giving of her own body, and thus we come to prostitution, pure and simple. And since everything happens in this inoffensive and well-meaning way, to the satisfaction of everyone, what is left for us but to enter the battle? I ask, sisters, how many Annas or Maria Annas must still be resurrected, or while alive be put to the test? Idiotized, weak, fragile by law, convenience, belief, and religion.
I say, let us refuse the fraudulence of masculine aid. We do not need it. Or more precisely, we do not want to accept this Christmas gift with its beautiful wrapping that hides the bomb that certainly once more will explode in our hands as always. If it is we who want, it can only be we who demand. Let us put an end to mystification and false modesty. Let us break through to the bottom of the waters where we sink, and we sink without breathing ever.
I ask, have we not come to the time to speak out? For example, about what we know to be true about our pleasure in bed. Denouncing clearly the man's game that makes the myth of vaginal orgasm, accusing of frigidity the woman who complains that she doesn't reach the spasm through simple coitus. Unhappily, falling into the trap of frigidity, the woman becomes again and once more his captive, his inferior. Can we still keep still?
I say, and in spite of everything, there will come those who will call the battle reactionary. The battle that will stretch on a long and strenuous path, that these Portuguese women will have to endure alone with their meager weapons. And there will come those who will attack, and from all sides will emerge knife points and splinters, and upon our backs will fall names like stones. But whores or lesbians, we do not care what they call us, as long as the battle is fought and not lost.
I ask if no other alternative is given us but open warfare against a whole social system which we refuse at base, and if we must destroy everything, including, if necessary, our own homes, will we turn back?
I say enough! It is time to cry enough and form a body, a block with our bodies!
You've been listening to All Night Sunday with the radio on. That last tape included the forbidden texts of three Marias who are now on trial for having written the new Portuguese letters. The tape was recorded January 28th in a one-night-only performance at Circle in the Square Theater with Carol Cole, Tammy Grimes, and Zoe Caldwell. The musicians were Joan Shanker, Gretchen Langhold, and Sue Svarik. The production was directed by Gilda Griot and Lois Sosin, who is the producer. We'd like to thank Barbara Buckner and her assistant, Ann Whitten, who supplied us with the audio from their videotape, which was altered for radio by Suzanne Zuckerman. Earlier this evening, you heard an interview with the director and actresses involved in Disquieting Muses, a response to the suicides of women artists. That production was directed by Betsy Chevy and included in the cast and in our interview tonight, Cass Self, Christine Campbell, Peggy Baer, Lynn Carney, and Joe Beth Levy. You've been listening to All Night Sunday with the radio on, with engineering by Gary Freed. This evening was produced by Suzanne Schoen. Good morning.
The program was on recording with Portions Live. I'm cutting my own way through my own day, and all I dare say is it's my own. I got my own seeds, got my own weeds, I got my own harvest that I've sown. I can tell you things I've done, and I could sing you songs I've sung. But there's one thing I can't give, for I and I alone can live. The years I've known and the life I've grown, but away I'm going, and it's my way. In my own game, I got my own name, and it's my way. I got my own kith, I got my own kin, I got my own sin, and it's my way. I got my own peace, I got my own wrath, I got my own path that only I can. I've grown.